we should begin this workshop?
This is our August workshop, and we've got three items on our agenda. The first one will be Al Carnes talking about our environmental compliance and future improvements. The next one will kind of kickstart our 2014 budget. And if you're looking for some guidance, we don't need to have all the answers today, because multiple workshops on that. And then just touch on the rules and regs again at the end of it. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Al to bring us up to date on what's happening with our environmental state of affairs.
Well, thank you for having me. I wanted to give just a little bit of background information. Likely aware of this, but I think it's important when we discuss where we're at in terms of meeting the benchmark standards that ecology has set for us. A little bit of the backstory there, how we got to those benchmark standards. We've got two facilities that fall under the national guidelines for stormwater, industrial stormwater, and boatyard stormwater discharge standards. Locally, or at the state level, the Department of Ecology creates the guidelines and sets the benchmark standards for those discharges. So they're looking at copper, zinc, and lead discharges there. Back in 2008, the Department of Ecology did a series of field trials on best available technology. And they looked at, they identified three potential candidates for promotion. And they looked at the cost effectiveness relative to the quality of stormwater discharge. They found the stormwater RRX system to be the most cost effective relative to the quality of stormwater it could create. The port bought two of those units and installed them. The results that we've seen don't match, in fact, fall quite short of the field trials that Ecology published. So we've got a system that's underperforming relative to what was expected. So we're looking at a number of ways to resolve that issue. We've exceeded zinc standards six times now, which triggers a level three response. There's a three-tiered response program that Ecology requires us to follow there. So we're at a level three response there. I think it's important to note, and you'll see the handout here at the bottom, first page there, that we're definitely not alone with those exceedances. In fact, most of the industry is really struggling to meet those benchmark standards. So we've got a number of things that we're looking at doing. We've got an engineer's report that's due at the end of the month. That's going to provide us with some guidance there on where we can affect some improvements in our system to essentially assist the stormwater RX system. So it's not an altogether too complicated system, but it's elaborate and it requires a lot of attention.
It's a what?
It's elaborate.
Oh.
So once you understand the system and how it's supposed to function, then it makes a lot of sense. But it's a little tricky when you're looking at blueprints to make sense of it all.
If I could just interject, I remember when DOE was doing those tests. Myself and a couple of other WPPA ports were somewhat critical because they selectively did the test in areas that were totally paved, were not necessarily high use facilities. So it wasn't just boatyards, they were doing it in industrial settings too, that they were running their tests. And you know, we told them you really need to try it in some unpaved facilities and in places where you get the higher activity levels than what you're testing. But you know, they were hindered by not having enough money either, you know, to do a broader test. So still the best of the three technologies that they used and tried.
Al, when you say you were getting an engineer's report, is that an engineer that developed the stormwater RX system or an independent engineer that's hired to try to figure out the problem?
It's an independent engineer attached in the handout here, you'll see on the second page there, there's qualifications for that engineering firm. It's one of the region's premier engineering firms. You can't really hire better. In fact, they just won a national award from their trade group last year for a project they did with Boeing. So we've retained the best minds.
Yeah, they're the outfit that wrote a grant so that we could get the stormwater.
Yeah,
our access.
Yeah, they've worked with us for many years, and they also worked with Reed Pendleton when the shipyard was built. So they understand how the stormwater system itself is laid out physically and what went in, all that.
Now, given that Ecology did essentially make a recommendation for the system, they've got a little skin in the game. I think it's important to remember that benchmarks are far different than codified standards. They're goals. So you essentially can't fail or be non-compliant with those goals. You can be unsuccessful at achieving them, but it's sort of like saying that the Mariners have failed a standard of major leagues.
That's a bad example.
Some lines they have.
Well, it's not that we're in violation, we're just not being our benchmarks.
Right.
That's correct.
And that was a real battle. It went on for over 2 years where and we participated, went down to DOE with other boatyards to make sure the term benchmark was in the regulation.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of push from the environmental side, you know, to have hard and fast, you miss this number, you fail, you lose your permit.
Right.
That was the pressure.
Right.
And DOE, to their credit, had enough common sense to realize that, you know, there's jobs and community values and everything else associated with, you know, not just boatyards, but industrial parks. And
well, not to mention it's a developing standard.
Yeah, it's a developing standard. You know, it's the best that technology could do. So hopefully in the next rewrite, because every 5 years DOE updates their permit, hopefully that word benchmark will continue, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of pressure to do that. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't print it large enough, but from Ecology's database here, these are the exceedances since June of 2011 from the boatyards that fall under that perm. So, I mean, there's over 200 exceedances. So I think that likely when that permit is rewritten, they're going to look at whether or not those benchmarks are really fall into the real world of boatyard operations.
So how many of those boatyards are using stormwater RX systems as opposed to other technologies?
Actually, I didn't look at that, but this list does have it. I can get you that information. It does list what treatments they use there. So I'll find out.
Okay.
Where does the zinc come from?
It's quite a ubiquitous compound. Give you an example, 1% of all tires by weight are zinc. It's found in treated lumber. Of course, we've got a lot of that in the boatyard.
Galvanized
roofing, fencing. So the materials, you know, we've got a cornucopia of zinc-producing elements in our boatyard.
And, you know, it's the type of element that Gold Star, you know, building. It's been there a long time. It was one of the first buildings built. Marine Exchange building, one of the old 1930 vintage railroad buildings. You know, I'm sure that was not treated with anything. You know, modern buildings, like what our new building is all coated. But even after enough years, the coating wears down, you start to get the zinc.
But this sheeting on this building here is zinc.
But it's coated.
That
one's coated.
But eventually, again, if you don't take care of it, it'll start leaching.
Chain link fences have it.
Yeah, you know, but what I think what we're seeing, and Alex can talk about some of the tests he's going to start doing here, we've got a lot of legacy, you know, stuff from when the railroad was here back in the 20s and 30s in this area. It's still in the soil. And other than digging everything up and paving it, I'm not sure, you know, and that's a many million dollar fix. I'm not sure we'll ever get rid of all the zinc. So,
do we have benchmarks from before we had the storm or RX so that we know what the zinc was then to know if we were traditionally or characteristically over because of all the old zinc things we have on our property?
We should have that data available, yes.
I don't know if it was
we didn't monitor zinc that much then. Yeah.
Zinc was added to boatyard permits.
Oh, so
yeah, so nobody really paid attention to it.
Copper.
Right.
Plus, we've got one or two boats out here that have zinc on them.
They're designed to go away, aren't they?
Right. Which, that's the whole philosophy is for them to dissolve.
Yeah.
But, and that may be, I would not be surprised if in the next 2, 3, 4 years we see legislation, just like we saw with copper, that will ban zincs in the maritime industry. And whether they go to aluminum or something else, of course, everybody in the boatyard industry is paranoid. But like the old saying, when people are to get you, paranoia makes good sense. Yeah, they'll have done away with copper, they'll do away with zinc. Say you go to aluminum, well, 5 years from now, I'll bet you aluminum will be on the hit parade for things you got to monitor. So.
I've got to quit taking my zinc lozenges.
Yeah, well, copper and zinc both are, necessary for life. It's in the multivitamins you take.
So we're looking at a number of next steps. Obviously, we're waiting for the Level 3 response report from Landau Associates. That'll likely provide the basis for scope of work that'll go in an RFP. Then we'll look at enhancements to the existing system we've got now. Likely, that'll be reconditioning the perimeter sand filters. We've got two on Sims Way, two in the shipyard area. Rehabilitating an underfunctioning sand filter that's in the middle of the boatyard. That's going to mean some major revisions in the way that we place our boats. Could mean a potential loss of revenue and losing some space for vessels. So we're trying to figure out how we can best manage that. It hurts to both spend the money to then perpetually lose money as well. In trying to enhance the system. But those are some of the primary things that we're looking at. Then upstream, of course, you can build the best filter system in the world. We're getting pretty close to having a centrifuge here. But upstream at the point of source control is where we're really putting a lot of attention there. As we were talking about revising the best management practices handout so it's easily read, we can better communicate to boaters. Definitely doing a lot more site walkthroughs, generating conversations with people talking about the BMPs, weekend walkthroughs as well. And then, of course, creating a lasting partnership with Marine Trades Association here and all the marine trades in the boatyard, and convincing them that it's in our mutual best interest particularly when it comes to educating the do-it-yourselfers there, that we need to be pulling the cart together here in the same direction. And I think we're well on our way there. I think that's largely understood with marine trades that I've talked to.
We met, the three of us, a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things that Al's going to start doing is going around and checking the we got to obviously wait till the rainy season comes back, but checking some of the gutters, the downspouts from different buildings and sampling that runoff and see which buildings are hot, if you will, and which ones aren't. And obviously if they're owned by the port, then it'll be our responsibility. But if, say, we find Townsend Bay Marine, one of their buildings, one of their older buildings, a lot of zinc coming off the roof, and we'll let it, they'll share those results with Townsend Bay, but it'll be up to the building owner to do something. So we're going to do some other hotspot checking, around and just see where we can know, isolate to those areas.
So we have some kind of a zinc monitor that can just instantly tell us, or do we have to send these little results, take samples and send them off to a lab and wait a while?
Both. I think for the sake of, we do have an on-site system that's okay in terms of the results there. I mean, it'll tell you if you're getting warmer, if you're hot. For the kind of data that we really need to, particularly when we're looking at spending a sizable sum of money, we'll be sending those samples to our lab. Typically use. In fact, you'll probably see me on a backhoe tomorrow up there in the boatyard. We're going to be scratching some dirt, sending some samples in. I suspect that we've probably got a pretty high load of copper and zinc, just given the history of those work areas, that type of ship that happens there, the amount. So we'll be digging holes a foot deep there for copper and zinc. Two different soil horizons there.
And was the problem with the seawater intrusion into the filter system dealt with?
It has been. It looks like it's been largely remedied by the last series of results, but of course, you know, it's been such a dry spell. I should mention too that the level two response came out and we initiated the testing there just prior to the dry season descending upon us, and so we just haven't had the rainfall to complete that series of sampling. So we've got a long list of areas in the boatyard that we're to be sampling from, including the buildings. And so as soon as it starts raining, I'll be out there sampling. I never thought before that I'd be waiting for rain.
Of course, the danger after a long dry spell, that first flush of runoff, it's really not a true sample because you've got several months of buildup. Essentially a rain barrel full of various substances, from crushed oyster shells to biochar to, you know, there's a number of things. Even I think it's Port of Vancouver gave a presentation a few years ago at an environmental conference where they were able to treat it just with kind of like a rain garden, you know, a miniature rain garden in a bucket. You know, native or certain plants that are known to bind, you know, like zinc and that sort of thing. So we may, once we do some samples and see where the hot spots are, we may want to try some experiments. And we know we can get biochar locally and, you know, crushed oysters. I'm an oyster grower. So,
yeah, we could probably come up with some of that stuff.
Because that could have.
I think so. One of the elements that we're really promoting heavily in the best management practices handout, in fact, it's the first bit of language that's conveyed there, that is that prior to relaunching a vessel, the site has to be returned to the condition that it was rented in. We've inherited a significant amount of hazardous waste. That's really problematic. It's problematic in terms of meeting our small quantity generator status, not exceeding that. We stepped into medium level generator status, and you can pretty much budget another half an FTE just for the paperwork. So it's really important that we don't accumulate a lot of orphan waste on site, bumping up against that ceiling now. So we do get a lot of orphan waste. A lot of vessel owners are anxious to get the boats in water. There's an opener they got to meet, or they're running out of money. And so there's a lot of pressure on our crew to get their boat back in water. We're going to have to be more forthright about the condition of the site prior to launch. Now, the county only operates its hazardous waste facility one day a week. I know that it's costing them better than $90,000 a year to do that. At just one day a week. Disposal costs are, you know, just astronomical. So it's important for both me and my conversations with vessel owners, for our yard crew at the when a vessel owner is hauling out, is filling out the paperwork, to let them know that they've got a budget time wisely there in disposing of any hazardous waste that they generate, maintaining the vessel. So we are prominently featuring in the BMP handout that they need to think ahead of time about how they're going to properly dispose of the materials, and also providing them with a site map and the hours of operation for the water risk waste facility. So our haul out crew is going to be reminding them. I mean, they'll have a number of reminders that the site condition has to be returned back the same way that it was found at the time when they're filling out the paperwork, when their boat's being blocked, the stands being placed around it, and then again with a reminder from me at least once. But I can pretty accurately predict, I think, that we're going to have an upset customer or two as we move forward implementing that. Should also mention that it's part of the BMP's presence. We simply haven't applied it as rigorously as we want to now. So we could continue to do business as we have. I think that I'd advise against that because I think the risk of losing our small water generator status is pretty significant and costly.
Not only that aspect, but the welding rod. I mean, after a seal boat leaves, we can find 200 or 300 welding rod ends.
Mm-hmm.
They just throw over the
toss.
That sink. So they need to be cleaning those up. They need to be managing those. And Al's not going to check off launch the boat until that site is clean. So we might be hearing some feedback from
might.
Well, yeah, I can almost guarantee that to them.
You know, a general part of the reminder and the coaxing of behavioral tendencies in the boatyard is cost. You know, we're trying to keep this place affordable, and we're trying to keep our rates competitive with other yards. And this is just going to drive up the cost. I mean, we're going to be able to quantify it so easily because this is all on its own line item now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a shocker when we get a year's results from this line item budget. It's going to be shocking. And its effect is boatyard operation costs.
It's not going to get any easier in the future. If anything, you know, this crew will be tightened again with the next permit rewrite.
Well, we're already feeling a considerable tightening at this time. I can't imagine no zinc, so I just can't imagine that.
They've mentioned it. We'll see. They're going to start the rewrite this coming year. So the next one's due in 2015, next issue. So we'll be working on it in 2014.
Just a small footnote on the bottom paint issue is that they originally started out going after TBTF, Tribunal 10. And so all the ships that ply the world's oceans no longer can use TBTF in their holds, in their weight, you know, water holds that they use for ballast. So what that's created in our environment worldwide is invasive species have been coming across the oceans and are mixing in with the environment. So there's a lot of invasive species issues that did not exist prior to that, but now exist. And, you know, invasive species are far more of a nightmare than the use of TBTF, you know, I think, because that's really messing with the system.
Well, I couldn't agree more with trying to deliver the message about cost of the systems we've employed and that we're continuing to upgrade. And that seems to resonate most of the vessel owners that I've talked to. Seem to understand that. Well, I asked them if they enjoy the moderate rates that they pay here, and they agree that they do. Behaviorally, this is only going to increase those costs as we try to.
Well, and not just the cost, but once again, we're one of the very, very last yards that allow do-it-yourselfers.
I believe we're the only publicly owned one.
We are. Public.
What about Port Angeles?
That's that's leased out to a private operator,
oh.
And I'm not sure how much he allows, you know, whether he allows like bottom paint. And
yeah, I don't think they do any bottom paint.
I think.
Oh, really? But the path there doesn't.
Yeah, Port Angeles is
in trouble too.
In trouble with it.
Friday Harbor is really in trouble. So
yeah, your
buddy Mike,
your buddy commissioner up at Port of Friday Harbor.
Yeah, 14 exceedances already.
And that's what that's why we're down to about 65 boatyards from over 80 a few years ago, because a lot of these small legacy yards that are family owned, they're just maybe an acre. They just can't afford these RX systems and paving and all the other treatment systems. And when you're on the waterfront with an acre of land, you can probably make a lot more money just by selling it to some developer. So I think you're going to see more and more of that as we go into the future.
I think Donato's on Lake Union is likely to be the next. They've got, by my road count here, 11 exceedances, I'm saying.
Now the one thing, even though these are benchmarks, what ecology does not want is to see a yard that's not trying. That's where you get in trouble. You know, if you acknowledge, okay, we got an issue, here's our engineer report, we're going to do this, this, and this as far as that proactive steps, you know, then they're satisfied. It's when you have your exceedance and you don't do the engineer report, you're not trying anything, you're just letting it continue, that's when DOE will come back to haunt you. So I think we've got a pretty good plan here.
Phase 1.
In the boatyard?
It probably don't know, that's why I brought the pictures. I'm sure the commissioner's right.
Oh, I mentioned the underperforming sand filter that runs through the middle of the boatyard. And this would be maybe the cost.
It essentially goes right under those boats right there. There's actually a sand filter under that. And we've been parking boats because we need the space on top of it for, what, since 99? Yeah. And, we're going to move all these boats, dig it up, get it back to its full treatment capability. Then we're going to have to work out, maybe we put the boats at an angle or put just smaller boats there so we're not actually compacting the sand filter itself. You can't keep driving over a sand filter and expect it to, you know, absorb the storm water.
Well, that was the extent of the original yard, though.
Yeah.
From Yoakum's over to right. When the railroad line, everything from there, from the railroad to the water was the original yard.
Yeah.
Could you show us?
Yeah, and then it comes down. You see this dark area? It actually comes down, does an L, and then enters the storm drain down there.
So it's not working
Larry.
Well. Larry, what we thought was phase one, and to show ecology we're trying, we're going to dig that up.
The sand
we do the sand filter. So please show that we're trying.
So how long was that sand filter? Those railroad tracks have been gone.
Well, 99. We put it in 99. We did the full storm water system. So, but it hasn't been functioning probably over 10 years.
One of the problems is with compaction won't lie, they're getting working in the boat, and that's the song.
We can't hear you out.
Well, it's just a line.
I'm sorry, the 300-ton lift really pulverized.
Well, that's the 75-ton.
Yeah, but this is in the small yard.
That's right. Yeah. Right. But what we end up with is quite a bit of fines, and those fines will pretty readily plug
the turbidity over
there. That's right. They do increase the turbidity, which then makes the stormwater RX system try to work harder to filter out the heavy metals that are in solution there. So we've got a lot of things working against us in that. So remedying that sand filter, while probably being the most costly cure, might be the most effective in terms of getting towards our benchmarks that are needed.
So what would that entail? Digging up the sand, putting new sand in?
It's likely that the sand might be okay. The fines have been compacted for time over them, simply not allowing the stormwater to enter into there. I should mention that by design, water will pool on top of those And so that makes it problematic to have our trades working ankle deep in water there. So we're going to have to discuss with Marine Trades what we're going to do about vessel placement there to keep them out of that area. So we're looking at a number of different options there of being able to both post vessels, maybe not as many, and also to keep that filtration system working into the future. So I know also that the travel lift doesn't work well over larger, say, quarry smalls, which is what ideally you'd have on the surface there. So that's another element we have to consider. We look at maybe quarry smalls in segments, paths that we can move the 75-ton lift over. So we're gonna have to get crafty about meeting the needs of two competing interests there.
Well, if that sand filter is not working now and we're exceeding the benchmarks, why don't we just let that sand filter out, just let it stay hard and do it on totally different technology that's above ground, that we don't lose the space, and maybe biochar could be the thing that replaces the sand filter and just leave it alone.
It has to, the way the yard is graded, it's graded in a V, so everything drains to that
point. Right.
So that collection system has to be in the middle of the yard.
Now you're talking about the small yard.
Yeah, we're only dealing with the small yard right now.
What I'm getting at is just forget the sand filter, just let it go into a pipe, then it doesn't have to go through the sand filter. It's got that impermeable layer of spines on the top of it. Let it go into a pipe, and then instead of having to utilize the square footage for not being able to store boats there, let it go to another place that we can put like a wire jar or something in. Then we can retain that.
How much is it going to cost to repair the sand
filter? I think the sand filter is probably the cheapest option.
Oh, it is?
I don't know if it's going to have that big of an impact. You know, so we can just tell Doug, okay, don't go put small boats in this one line from now on. Mm-hmm. Instead of putting small boats, you know, and move. You know, we got a lot of empty space along the highway. And I'm not sure that's going to, you know, with
the small yard, the use or the number of boats there has declined noticeably in the last 4 or 5 years.
I'm not sure it's going to come back to the.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. You know,
so we may have some flexibility without losing the total capacity of the yard.
How much is it going to cost to repair the sand filter?
We don't know yet.
Guess?
Well, we won't know until we get a response from an RFP. I mean, we could, you know, try to put together an engineer's estimate for it, but that'd largely be guesswork, particularly if we're looking at other additives like biochar. You know, it's really hard to gauge.
Still, we're not talking in hundreds of thousands of dollars here. We're talking
under 100,000.
Yeah, I'd say 30.
150,000?
No, 30.
Under 50. Oh, under 50. Oh. So, what does the NARX filter cost?
Well, the two that we got was a $500,000.
Yeah, they're $250,000 a piece, aren't they?
Yeah. Depending on the size, you know, you can expand them or contract them.
Well, Stormwater RX has a pre-treat filter. Pre-treat before it goes in. It's getting mixed reviews, and we're actually working with Francesco here to let's do our own with biochar. Maybe biochar is a way, it's just an unproven way. So we want to start small, do tests, and see if that can actually pre-treat the stormwater before it goes in.
Or yes. Even post-treat, or work, you know, send it through the RX and then do one more step of biochar.
Right.
Maybe some other compounds. See what it looks like. And of course, all of this, we got to wait for rain. We're going to actually try it. So.
Well, we won't have to wait long.
That's true. And even though
I hope to answer your question, Steve.
But I'm still thinking that, you know, that might be $50,000 thrown down the dumper because fines are not going to cease to be created yet just because we replenished our sand filter. They're going to plug it up again at some point. And if we just replace that with a pipe, that pipe will stay functioning for a long time. If we found something at the other end of that pipe that replaced the sand filters, now malfunctioning and will malfunction again when another layer of fines forms on top of it, we could have easy access to whatever filtration thing that we have. It could just be a great big silo full of sand or something. Yeah, and then we could, yeah. Then we wouldn't have to worry about not you being able to utilize that space and having to do this again when the fines.
Well, yeah, we can, as we get more information, you know, review the options. But the sand filter is a fairly easy thing to do. And, you know, part of this is to show ecology that, you know, we understand and we're doing something. And they understand sand filters and how they operate. So it's something that everybody recognizes as
a proven
technology or process. And not that, and sand filters, if you protect them, they last a long time. But yes, eventually you got to clean them out and bring in some new sand and all that. But I think it's going to be a combination of things. And the real big one is, you know, we got other sand filters that, you know, we need to look at as years go by.
The sand filter in the shipyard is performing pretty well since we opened the orifice. It's doing a good job, and it was designed in 99. So.
Where is it located at?
It's all the way at the other end, so it goes right along the creek.
Okay.
It goes along the side.
Is it the full width of the yard?
It goes, starts at the highway and goes all the way down.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, runs the whole, there's a kind of a curb.
Yeah.
With some cuts in it.
Right.
So all the sheet flow is supposed to be that direction. So mm-hmm. It runs, you can actually kind of see this path. Mm-hmm. It's actually the sand filter. Mm-hmm. It eventually goes down over here. If you ever go down where the YTB tug is, you can see our RX system right there too.
Uh-huh.
It goes into here. And of course, this is all protected as a high-grade wetland.
Right.
So actually that's, from a natural standpoint, that's an excellent system, if you will. You know, the problem is we don't have the ability. If you go down to Swantown Boatyard, Port of Olympia, since they built a brand new yard, now there's a small yard, 75 ton, totally paved, fenced in, 5 o'clock, everybody out of the pool, nobody's allowed to work
right
in there at night. Do-it-yourselfers kind of thing. But they built an entire bioswale, rain garden complex, detention ponds.
Yeah.
But they had the luxury of starting with a blank piece of paper,
right,
and designing it from the start. But even they are having problems.
Oh, even they are having problems.
Yeah.
They've had 2 exceedances of zinc since June of 11.
Yeah, that's quite the show down there.
Yeah.
That place was, wasn't that a brownfield property, wasn't it?
It was. It was, yeah, because that all had been old logging yard, all sorts of stuff back in the 40s, 50s.
So we've had 3 exceedances of zinc?
Six for zinc.
And they've had 2 or 3?
They've had 2.
2, and they're a state-of-the-art.
Paved.
Yeah, they are state-of-the-art.
Small yards, paved, fenced off.
Yeah, and everybody's out of the pool at 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah. It's, it just, the problem is technology has advanced further in the ability to test. You know, the laboratories can detect increasingly smaller and smaller quantities of different substances and elements like zinc and copper and et cetera. But the rest of the technology and how to get rid of it hasn't advanced as quickly.
Well, when you think about how invasive it is, I mean, if 1% of your, what was the tire figure?
By weight, 1%.
1% of your tire is zinc?
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're almost
pissing into the wind.
Yeah, you've lost the battle just going to work.
It's like the copper in brake pads, you know. They're taking copper out of brake pads for this very reason. And what happens when they take the zinc out of tires?
We were talking to Landau, and they said if we stopped work today, no more work in the yard, for 10 years, we would still have problems in front of 10 years. So it's in the gravel, it's in the soil, there's really no quick, easy fix for it.
No.
And I think we're pretty good compared to some other yards where we don't take much runoff from the city streets.
Right.
You know, a lot of yards, when it rains, the sheet flows across the street and right through their yard. So they're getting that 1% from the tires.
Yeah.
You know, that they didn't even generate, but, you know, they're stuck with it.
It's interesting to note that when one of the shipyards on the north side of Lake Union chose to simply close its doors instead of investing $500,000 into a new Union stormwater system, that the outflow into Lake Union was significantly degraded because, as it turned out, they were pushing through the system they did have in place quite a bit of stormwater runoff from the road.
Oh, and when that capability went away, the
pollution is even worse because the yard isn't there to do some treatments.
There's a number of funding sources that may be available here. Of course, it's always ecology. They never seem to know year to year what funds are going to be available as they're waiting for the legislature to approve this budget. So there are some funding opportunities available. How much of the cost that we're looking at incurring here, those funds will cover, don't know. But there is some relief likely available. We'll obviously pursue whatever grant funds are available, wherever they are.
You got a sample of your draft trifold?
I didn't bring that yet. No. As I mentioned, some of the members of the Wisconsin Free Trade Association kindly reviewing and commenting on that first draft. So definitely want the perspective of Marine Trades in putting that brochure.
Of your new BMPs?
That's correct.
Well, it's a one-page trifold, you know, that kind of condenses what you were saying earlier, you know, the most common things, you know, what you should or should not do, something that people are more likely to read. We'll still have all the other BMPs that they've got to sign, mm-hmm. but this will kind of...
That'll let them know what they just signed.
Yeah, a condensed executive summary kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another subject that I kind of wanted to address a little bit was the upcoming increase in garbage rates. You know, as long as we've got the environmental department on board here today, what have we decided to do with the recycling centers, or what do you call those little places where we keep the garbage can?
The environmental centers. The
environmental centers?
Well, there's a number of options that we're considering. I spoke with the regional manager of DM Disposal, which is the firm that does all of our waste management here, on what types of containers he can offer us, different rates for pick up different types of containers, frequency. Trying to gain my own knowledge about where the peak seasons are. I think it's important when you're putting together reformulation of how we do business now. Make sure that you're not spending at the high mark here just to manage a 2 to 4 week peak season there. You don't want to set your standard that manage that, perhaps more labor, a greater frequency of collection just during that peak season. And not try to provide at that higher level for the entire season. So I'm looking at the data that I've got from waste management there. I'm going to see other pickups, trying to graph that, and then balance that how we maybe make decisions in a way that we do that. One thing to consider, I know it's been problematic, and I'm not sure if we're ready to overcome hurdles that the port faced the last time we hosted the county-sponsored recycling center here. But I know that the county is anxious to expand on its collection of recyclables. You know, the Skookum also, by contract, is obligated to increase by one its number of collection sites in the Port Townsend area. So there may be opportunity there where some of the costs for establishing a recycling center here be borne by the county. Or the split would be probably 50-50, would be my guess, if we wanted to go down that path. You know, there are a number of problems there in hosting that site before, so we'd have to identify those.
No, maybe you were on the commission. We had the recycle, you know, the big containers where, you know, the paper here, the glass here, plastic mm-hmm. there kind of thing. And we had them down by just past the heavy haul out washdown along the Larry Scott Trail, and nothing but complaints from people using Larry Scott Trail. Plus, people would use it and block the heavy travel from getting through.
And, not to mention the potholes in the yard.
And the potholes speeding through the yard. And then we moved them down right here.
Weren't they here?
Where Mark Grant has his lay down area inside the fence. And I remember Mark Yocum came to one of the commission meetings with a recording. It was really amazing, the noise. People would take their glass bottles one at a time and throw them in, smashing them, instead of just dumping them all at once. And we'd find hot water heaters, sofas, all sorts of stuff laying next to the containers. So,
right.
It's and then the wind. That was the other problem down by Larry Scott Trail. The wind would come up and
spill garbage.
You know, cardboard would be scattered all across the shipyard. It was fun.
Isn't there some chance of working in conjunction with the existing recycling center and putting some of those big bins where that thing is?
I'm sorry, which?
Well, the county has a hazardous waste.
Oh, the Monterey Risk Waste Facility.
Yeah.
That's an option we haven't looked at. I know that space gets tight in there. To keep costs down, the county tries to ship moderate risk waste twice a year. So while right now it looks nearly empty there, inside there, it looks like there's volumes of space, that'll quickly go away. By the time they do their December shipment, it'll be full of drums. So real estate's pretty tight in there, actually. So I don't know if we could put one there. There's no good place to site it. There's just the least bad place.
That's better than our revenue producing boatyard.
Well, short of doing that, I think we should probably consider gaining some control over access, limiting access to that. The port now operates a de facto transfer station. We're basically supplementing, subsidizing, I should say, a large segment of Port Townsend's population for its disposal costs. I've handed back bags of garbage to people that are not marine tenants or vessel owners, and asked them to kindly make sure that this gets put out in their curbside collection, or if they're self-haulers, they take it to the transfer station, because they're asking our tenants and our mortgage customers to subsidize their costs. Yeah,
they don't want to pay
operating their own
$10 a week.
That's right. Now, so limiting access to those facilities would vastly improve on that condition. Wouldn't remedy it. I don't think that there's any magic bullet here. I think we can do a number of things, maybe incrementally, that will curb the costs that we're seeing here. But there's no easy cure for it.
No, we're going to have to lock the environmental centers. That's given. With a 28% increase in garbage rates, it's going to be that much worse.
Unless you will find the stuff just stacked up on the outside of the fence.
And we do now.
You do now what?
When the bins...
Find stuff just laying on the ground.
When the bins get overfilled, then people just dump where they... right inside the environmental center. Now, right now, the port is taking on a significant liability in having our crew manage those bins, where DM disposal won't pick up the bins if they're overfilled, which means that our staff has to empty one needle prick from a dirty needle, and the payout on that's going to be pretty sizable.
Well, not to mention the unpleasantness for the individual.
Well, sure. I mean, Hep C can certainly change your life for the worse. So I think that we need to consider the liability that we have right now in opening those facilities up to the general public at 24/7.
A number of years ago, we looked into compactors. Have you looked back into that trash compactor?
There's no cost effectiveness for us to do that, because you'd basically be Well, the O&M costs on that is sky high. You know, once you move past the warranty period, it's amazing what breaks. You know, wrist pins on those.
Well, once again, you're handling the garbage that you're trying to avoid.
Plus, you're still paying by the pound, aren't you? So it doesn't make
a difference. Yeah, right.
We pay by the pound? I thought we paid by the container.
No, we pay by the container, but...
It doesn't matter if it's a structure.
But the ROI on that is, you know, it's off 20 years, and, you know, a 3 to 5 year warranty on that is the industry standard. So you've got a lot of O&M costs that are going to be for meeting that ROI. 20 years is the longest lifespan you can project for a compactor. So at the very end, if you got really lucky.
So the acronyms are what?
Oh, return on investment. Sorry. So once you figure in your operations and maintenance costs. So once you figure out how much you've truly got invested in that machinery, you know, if you're lucky enough to get the unit to get to 20 years, it might, you know, pencil out, maybe. But I know that the county bought a compactor. It was supposed to be the industry's best. And at 5 years, they already had about $250,000 into fixing. So it's they're not inexpensive to get into, and then the operating and maintenance costs are through the roof. And that's what the best of them have. So it should be part of a review of what we can do, but
well, one of our big costs is also boat owners. We literally got the inside of the boat and put it in our dumpster. at some point we're gonna have to stop that.
I've been in a lot of shipyards in almost a 20-year career in the merchant marines, and the truth is I've never seen a more generous boatyard in terms of the services offered and at the rates offered. This is an exceptionally high level of service that's being offered at very reasonable rate relative to maybe more than 50 shipyards that I've been in. So I think it's important to be mindful of that. I know when I was working for the county, we did a fairly extensive review, the level of service offered in other municipalities in terms of solid waste delivery. We were shocked to find at how high a level of service the county was offering for a relatively low rate. I think if you conducted a survey of boat yards in Washington State, you'd likely find the same results for our operations. So I think it's important to find out when we're talking to vessel owners about the services that we do offer. You know, the moderate risk waste facility at only one day a week seems like a pretty meager offering of service level. But consider that there's 7 other counties in Washington State that don't offer any. There's no service available whatsoever. So, and Jefferson County is one of the few counties that offers any service for commercially generated hazardous waste. So it's actually a pretty exceptionally high level of services that are being offered.
Well, I think we need to develop a plan quickly to lock the environmental centers. Very quickly, because we all know what we're paying for garbage, and it's a lot of money. Remember those figures, you guys? Yeah.
Will those start in 2014?
It will. The rates go into effect in 2014. There's going to be a little bit of buffer there. There's a time because Murray's Disposal or DM Disposal, they have a number of DBAs. They will have to petition Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission for new rates. So there's likely to be a 3 to 6 month buffer in there before the UTC agrees with the new rate increases. So, but certainly by the end of the first quarter, I would say 2014, you want to have a game plan in place.
We had talked about a key card system. It could be the same key card for the restroom. So you have restroom and environmental center where you card in your valid tenant or
It'd still be open during the day.
Yeah, we need to, especially during the summer with all the transients, the visitors, they need to feel, take their bag up there. We want people to have access for to use the oil, because all the oil,
right,
it's one of those two.
Right. How about just padlock with a key? Is that just impossible, or?
That's like every tenant to have a key.
Right.
And then most of the community would have that key.
Yeah.
Yeah, Henry would make a million bucks on key applications.
But it's a deterrent.
Any other questions?
I had one complaint from a mortgage tenant that the garbage cans were getting emptied often enough at environmental centers. And I think it was at a peak time, like a Sunday or something. You know, it had to be when everybody was coming up and emptying their garbage cans. And they suggested that I take a tour of the environmental centers during a peak time and see what was going on.
And it can, you know, same at Point Hudson, you know, 4th of July weekend, Labor Day weekend, you know, where you get a lot of visiting boaters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if we had more bins, there'll always be those one or two weekends where there's just so much use that...
that you just can't anticipate it. They cited Friday Harbor as a sterling example of how it should be done. And they said that when they cruised into Friday Harbor, all along the dock, there was great big dumpsters, aplenty. And I said, well, if we put the great big dumpsters out in our yard, then they would be full of the town's garbage instantly. Because at Friday Harbor, in order to get to the dumpsters that they have readily available for the boaters, you got to walk by the office.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so, it's kind of a self-policing thing. You know, if you're going to pack your tires and yard waste out, you've got to pack it by the office and all the other boat owners. And they'll get after you, you know. So they understood that, but they just did express their wishes that during peak times they found it very difficult to throw the garbage away. Because they come back from the San Juans, and every place you go in the San Juans, most challenging thing to find is a garbage can,
mm-hmm.
because there is a huge problem with garbage up there.
Yeah, they don't want your garbage.
Right, they don't want your garbage.
$238 a ton tipping.
Where's that at?
In San Juan County.
In San Juan County?
Compared to $113 in Jefferson County.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the highest in the state. It has to be barged off the island.
Right.
And trucked off the island. Both, I think, they're doing now.
Or brought to Port Townsend.
Yeah.
One boat at a time.
Let's look at the schedules. We do vary the schedules. So we have, it's seasonal, we have three dumpsters versus two.
Uh-huh.
But maybe that's not the right combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they said that the problem was particularly heinous on A and B dock, which is, of course, where they moor their boat.
Yeah, it's the trailer boat people that are the worst.
Oh, it's the fish guns.
Yeah. Well, more to follow. We'll probably provide you another update or two as we go through the coming months and do some of these samples once the rains return, and we'll share the results with you.
Yeah, I can foresee nothing but increased vigilance in the regard of environmental compliance. And I can really see Al's job expanding into probably getting him some help.
Yeah, and
in the very near future.
And I think, and of course, we need. I'm going to have Al give a similar update to the staff, our next staff luncheon, because we all need to be part of the enforcement team, if you will.
Right.
Any of us that are driving through or walking through, whether you're maintenance, moorage, yard staff, you know, senior staff. We see something that's not right, we need to stop and say, hey, you might want to do this or that, or check the yard office before you do that. But, I haven't seen the agenda yet. I think the WPPA is still working on it. Their annual environmental conference will be September 25th, 26th, something like that. And I plan on sending Al to it, and depending on the agenda, I've gone to those before. I think you've gone to at least one or so before. So once we get the agenda, I'll share that with everybody.
Then moving on with our topic. workshop agenda, the 2014 budget would be next.
This is our first real workshop on the budget. You know, staff will be seeking some guidance from the commission, you know, on everything from fees, rates, taxes, et cetera. And what our plan is, and we'll be talking about it this afternoon about our first meeting in September, doing it down on Quilcene, where we'll have another workshop, and that'll be a critical workshop from a budget perspective. Staff will put together a list of projects for you to kind of think about and prioritize, and some estimated costs along with those. But I'd like to get Amy started on drafting a budget. So I would assume, you know, things like mortgage rates. You know, would you like staff to put together, like we did in the last year, you know, since we have that formula, you know, a half cent, a full penny, a 1.5 cent, here's what the impact would be.
So what did we raise it last year, a penny and a half or a penny?
So would you like to see that sort of stuff, you know?
That was helpful.
Yeah, that was
that,
helpful.
That really does make the mortgage a little bit more palatable.
And I think that also finding some good comparables, you know, to know what people around are doing so that we can defend the rates that we arrive at.
And we usually, you know, about this time, we'll be getting calls from other marinas and ports to see what we're doing, and we call them to see what they're doing. And,
Larry, one other question. For the Quilcene meeting, would it be possible to use the community center?
Bank.
Yeah. It the food bank is on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
So we thought, like we've done before, the timber house is reopened.
Yeah, but that's really a small space. And it's not really conducive to having local residents feel comfortable.
The community center was also booked the Tuesday and the Thursday.
So you gave that a good old try.
The timber house room is a lot more conducive. Yeah, we've tried to use the yacht club down there, but the lighting is so dim, and their tables are round. They're not. Yeah, it's hard to have an organized setting, and we can actually get more citizens. You can get a lot of chairs in there.
Yeah, we had a pretty good one at the community center. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, that was that special thing.
Yeah. But it still allowed a lot of people to come in and sit and participate. Listen.
Not a lot of options down there in South County. So. But anyway, we'll get some comparables from other marinas. And, you know, same for shipyard rates, if you want to look at anything there. It's taxes, of course. Tell us if you want us to take the 1% or not. Now we've got some bank capacity. 2%?
Should be.
We haven't taken any tax for at least the last 2 years.
We haven't taken it, no, but I need to double check whether or not the resolutions were actually done to truly bank that capacity. So I need to double check on that. So we may not have bank capacity, but keep in mind, even if we take the 1%, we're talking $8,500 to $9,000 a year. It's not a huge dollar amount there.
But if we had banked it, we would have 2 years plus.
Correct.
We'd have roughly $20,000.
Right.
Did you run a CPI thing yet, or we'll provide that next month? Just show the commission what CPI has done.
I have not done that. I mean, I don't have it. We've got that information back at the office, but I don't have it.
Yeah, because that's a running thing that the Fed put together.
Oh, the airport associations might be interested in that.
Yeah, in fact, well, that's speaking of the airport. Leaf came in the other day and we talked about it. And Steve, you talked with us about thing, and also you all with Eric Taylor's idea about lease rates. The commission has already told staff you don't want to do anything that would reduce the revenue at the airport. And, you know, somehow we need to bring closure to this one way or another. And we can either do it by adding it to the agenda at an upcoming meeting, or we could incorporate it as part of the budget process where we look at it and make a recommendation and let the budget process do whatever it's going to do to that idea.
Well, all of the leases out there have a CPI. CPI elemented.
Right. The only one that's weird is the Jeffco hangar, which is a very old lease that has got a cap of some sort. I forget the exact language on it.
It has a CPI cap?
Yeah.
It's rate was tied to the grass tie-downs.
Yeah.
So you can't charge any more than the grass tie-down rate. And then we thought about raising the grass tie-down rate, but we don't get anybody there now, so.
Well, it wouldn't matter if we raised it then.
And we actually went to court some years ago over the Jeffco lease. Judge said, hey, lease is a lease. So we haven't been able to change it. But, you know, your call. Staff's willing to go either way, whether you want to put it as a separate agenda item. Or...
Well, I think if it goes on as a budget thing, I'm not sure if that'll actually end up being a resolution. If it'll just go, oh, we're not going to lose revenue, that might not be a real absolute. This is the end. If we have it as an agenda item, we can say, these rates are different because these are different leases, because the CPIs are different, and so...
it is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
You know, just like your analogy to mortgage rates, you know, if I went in for a mortgage last year versus going in this year, different interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, if you want to just put that on, we can put that on the next agenda.
I'd be in favor of just using the budget to drive the bus, because the budget drives so many other buses. I mean, when we look at mortgage rates, we're going to be looking at the budget. That's what's going to make our decision on mortgage rates when we do the budget this year. And when we do yard rates, we do the same thing. We look at the budget, and that'll make our decision on yard rates.
And we can do the same thing for the airport. One of the things that we're discussing is, which was part of what Eric Taylor's basis is we haven't adopted a new
uniform rate
right. Is we just adopt a new uniform rate as part of the budget process.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself would
that unifying CPI rate.
Well, you know, we did that commercial appraisal back in 2004 to set what the commercial market rate was back. And as Carolyn has already said, we can just
adopt it again
or apply a CPI to it, saying the new rate is now, instead of 48 cents, is now 50 cents. You know, it's well within your authority to do that.
Yeah, and the only thing I'm thinking is just, it's the way we do everything else. Why not do the airport the same way?
How do I stop this thing?
Oh.
Yeah. Nobody ever calls me on my cell phone.
So some of the things to keep in mind is also with the budget is we are seeing increased costs, obviously, with garbage. You know, our utilities will be going up. We're just now starting to get some of the rate increases for the health care,
mm-hmm.
Retirement saw almost a 2% increase in the employer contribution. So, you know, a lot of those costs are already going up. So
just and we'll try to get a feel for that, but it may be October or so before we get all of that data.
Right. We'll know a lot more in October, that's for sure.
But we know which direction it's going. It's just how much.
Right.
It always goes in the same direction.
It's a one-way heart valve. It all goes one way.
Right.
And that's something I think a lot of the users of port facilities, yeah, they we're in a recession, but you know, the cost of running these facilities, you know, has still gone up every year throughout the recession. Whether it's just the cost of a 2x4 or the cost of the insurance or whatever. You know,
Yeah, and our wages are on an automatic escalator.
Yeah, it's union contract won't be up for renegotiation for another year.
Healthcare for a while has gone up 15% a year.
Yeah, dental, all that.
I just saw that right before I came down here, so it wasn't going up a great deal at this point, but not to the level at least of the retirement.
Not to the level of the retirement.
The retirement increase, the employer contribution going up almost 2%.
Oh, the healthcare is not going up 2%.
It didn't appear just at a quick glance when I looked at it as I was walking out the door, but you know, just the retirement, I'm looking at about a $31,000 increase in our share.
So. Another thing you should start thinking about is our reserve funds. You know, due to your direction a month or so ago, we started putting $10,000 a month back into the boat haven reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of start building it back up. And since we did the commercial base and CD dock headlocks, but, you know, think about that. You know, you want to continue at that rate. You want to do more. You want to do less. We'll try to incorporate that into the budget as well. As far as projects, Jim and I have been physically walking a lot of our facilities. We both last week walked every linear foot of C-Dock and D-Dock. We also went down to Quilcene a week ago and walked that facility. I'm going to go back out on the jetty walkway here at low tide, just kind of get a current feel for what everything looks like and the condition it's in. And it might be good if you can find the time over the next several weeks, to do the same thing, just so we all have that common experience when we start prioritizing, because I think you're going to have an eye-opener if you haven't been down to Quilcene, places like that for a while.
Has anyone been to Matsmats?
I have.
Yeah, about the boat zero was my last time.
Has the boat ramp deteriorated? I've gotten reports that some of those logs are getting all cattywampus.
It's starting to get worse and worse and worse every time I visit.
About every 3 years, we go down there and kind of rearrange them, bring more gravel down.
And maintenance just was down there like last week, because I had somebody at the old sheriff Brassfield, he called, and he said one of the planks had come loose that had a cleat on it, and he said if anybody tied the boat to it, it would just pull the whole plank off.
So
I know maintenance went and repaired that.
Mm.
But I think we need to visit all the, go out to Gardner and Hadlock, and just so we have an idea of that, because one of the projects that we need to assess is, we're putting a lot of improvements in to this boat ramp with the new washdown. If you haven't been over there, they got half of it poured and in use now. It's really nice. They'll be pouring the other half here in the next few days, plus the repaving the asphalt. But next year, 2014, will be the RCO cycle for that committee I sit on. So we kind of need to make a decision, or if we're going to go ahead with the expansion of the boat ramp, then we need to be thinking about applying for the RCO grant, putting a briefing together. It's a very formatted briefing. Jim will have to give it because I'm on the committee, so I can't.
So we have a permit in hand?
We will have
by then. This will be next spring. We usually meet in the April, May time frame, so we got some time. But again, if we're going to commit to that, because it's at least a 25% match, but we need to determine how much of a grant we're going to go in for. You don't want to go in for $1 million when there's only $2 million to give out to 30 projects. And you don't fare well. they try to spread out the money as much as they can across as many entities and parts of the state. So that's something we need to talk about. And they'll take a lot of staff time putting that together and doing the briefing. I plan on doing a white paper. I've done these before. just kind of my, you know, the director's assessment. And I usually walk through each facility, you know, with a paragraph, you know, what's working, what's not working, and kind of just give you my thoughts for what it's worth on the budget.
What requires right. more immediate attention.
And right. And, of course, ultimately, it's your decision, but I feel I'm obligated at least to provide that to you and recommendations on rates and other thoughts. So, the other thing was format. Yeah, is there anything in the budget, you know, from a format that you'd like to see change, whether it's the budget document itself, you know, how we present the budget? And, you know, personally, I think we've got the budget document down pretty good. You know, if you take 5 minutes of your time as a citizen, taxpayer, to understand it, it's a pretty readable document right now.
But I don't know what we can do to make it any more clear. Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, the environmental issues are becoming more, I mean, every year more of an issue. I mean, they could be headlined in bold or...
Well, we gave them their own line item, which is going to be really helpful in our conversations.
We also have a 2 or 3 page preamble
right.
to the annual budget. We could, you know, highlight the environmental, you know, what's new in the budget.
Yeah, how the environmental expenses have developed over the last, say, 8 years or so.
And how our action with the city and the COTI deal. You know, we got our stormwater fees back that we're going to apply to the environment, and although the tenants are still paying stormwater fees, instead of going to the city and evaporating, it's going to come to us, and we're going to put that also in the environmental fund.
Yeah, that narrative, I think, is really helpful, and perhaps instead of just one great big narrative at the front, you can put a narrative in front of being like in front of the environmental sitting, just like what you said, and another narrative in front of mortgage or yard operations or something stating what's different or unique or changed or...
Yeah, that's an idea. Because the mortgage guys say, oh, why are you charging us? Because we generate a lot of money, but we put a lot of money into mortgage.
Yeah.
And that might be an interesting idea to headline the some of the issues.
Some will be easier to write than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thankfully, I'm not writing.
I was just thinking of the airport. That could be 8 pages. Well. Just to, we just may have tripled the size of our budget document.
we'll
take a look at that.
Just a brief summary of issues at the airport. Is that possible?
Actually, the airport's doing pretty well. I mean, it's just this great discussion. I mean, I walked every inch of the runway and taxiway, and we're going to address every issue. The FAA.
Oh, with this resurfacing project?
The FAA approved our taxiways in addition.
And the tarmac up by the
Swiss Coast. So that's going to solve 85% of the problems at the airport for the next.
And Mary Vargas at the FAA has already said we're locked in for future money to do the actual dig up the pavement and resurface the next go around. You'll all do asphalt.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
How do we get locked in for that so far?
2018. We budget we have to budget 10 years out.
Oh.
So 2018, they're planning for October.
And I I baked an apple pie and a blackberry pie and took it to Renton to the FAA.
Yeah. Really?
Well, so now, is that next?
But it wasn't a bribe. It was...
right.
Yeah. Friendship. Is that next paving going to have to be a crown as opposed to shifts?
Well, that's still
a budget work on our part.
That's still a debate.
They're only allocating $1.2 million, so I can't imagine.
I got a bill.
Oh, yeah, that won't pay for the new sewer.
They'll repave it.
It's not if you crown it, then it's going to require all new stormwater
right.
along the south side. It'll be a $2.5-3 million project then. So, but it's nice that, and you know, it's not been easy. But Jim and I have spent a lot of personal time supporting the FAA, if you will, over the years. We've got a pretty good relationship with those folks, so.
She showed up at one of the boat shows, didn't she? Mary Vargas?
Yeah.
The small lady?
Yeah, small dark-haired lady.
Yeah, what meaner than a snake?
Got a big stick?
Yeah.
She
looked like
she and Sumi, what's her name, Carol?
Yeah.
Who's now the head boss over there. They're two pretty powerful ladies.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah, that's why I bake the pies. Well, is there anything else that we need to just kind of tee up? And
will our quill seam improvements be in next year's budget or this year's budget?
I think, well, I'm going to recommend this year's budget.
Yeah.
See if we can fund it this year.
Yeah, okay.
You all know about the trip and fall we had, right? Before last.
I heard about it, but I don't know the details. Yeah.
I think we need to, I told Ozzy to get some signage up just saying, as you go down the dock, be careful. Because what it is, the through rods are totally shot, so you got about three or four concrete sections of the road. They're all independent.
Mm. You know, no, he said the whalers were all rotted.
And the whalers are all rotted, and there's nothing to... So what we're thinking of doing, we've got a lot of material left over from the commercial basin. You know, those nice cedar whalers and everything. It's too much work, though, for our maintenance crew to handle and still have everything else to do, and they don't have the working knowledge. They could do it over time, but it'd take them a month to do what somebody that does it for a living could do in a week. So I think we need to at least do that section, but it still begs the bigger question of what do you do with the rest of the facility? You know, should we do what we did the commercial basin for the entire facility and see if we can get another decade out of it? Because it's about the same age as the commercial basin as far as the docks go.
Beck and I are going down next week. We're going to do a full assessment. We're going to measure all the fingers so we know how much supplies we need to do it. We're going to give two options. One is just fix what is broken, and the other would be to go around and do the whole thing. So we'll have more figures for you when we get to
the whole thing like you did.
Just like commercial basin, which is a great project.
Yeah, it came out nice.
And we're checking... I may have to ask Carolyn for her opinion, but under the RCW 53, all material and work required by port district not meeting the definition of public work, RCW 39, blah, 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 may be procured in the open market or by contract, and all work ordered may be done by contract or day labor. Day labor is a specific legal term. And I remember, I think it was a small ports conference a few years ago where they talked about the use of day labor, where you actually hire some number of individuals to act like port staff, but they are hired to work on a single project. But there are some limitations. It's, what, $40,000? $40,000. So you don't have to go out for a competitive bid or anything, or even use a small works roster. And so it might be a mechanism that we could hire a couple of guys who know how to do this work. Here's the materials, you know, just get it done and knock it out in a matter of really relatively short time. So I want to make sure we're legal on doing that. So other than that, anything else? Be looking for some input from the commission at the next workshop, then. If you need anything between now and then, let us know, and we'll feed it to you as far as any data. And we might get the other mortgage rates. That's pretty easy. And shipyard rates, too. All right.
Rules and regulations?
Not much, other than the fact that you've had them. We got some comments from staff. Doug provided quite a few comments, so we're going through that. And what I need to know is, how do you want to proceed from here? Do you have any comments? Do you want us to kind of, once we incorporate Doug's items, give you another draft? We'd like to get this thing adopted here in the next month or so, you know, maybe by the end of September.
So how many other comments are you waiting for besides Doug?
That was the last one.
Okay, yeah, another draft would be good. And then if we could somehow highlight what his changes were so we can see what he decided. You know, you want a different.
Yeah, and then I see no reason why we can't move ahead with it. Did you have any changes you wanted to add to that?
Not at this point, but are all the underlinings, that's new stuff?
Yeah. Underlining. outline's new and then
double cross-outs. Underlining.
Yeah. And there's crossouts or exits.
Trying to get back to the rules and regs here. This damn thing locked up on me the other day and took three of us to.
Did you have to, how did you, mine did the same thing. It completely locked up.
Yeah, it, well, Amy finally, it was what, you pressed the on-off button plus the little.
Hold the power button and the home button down at the
same
time.
Yeah, I figured it out, yeah. And I got it going again.
Yep.
But I have no idea why it did that.
Maybe.
I might have an idea why it did that.
Confession time?
Our truck was broken into, and my iPad was stolen, and so the police have it locked down. So, that might be why. But I don't know that for a fact.
How does that affect ours?
Well, they're all hooked in through the same iTunes account, and that's how they're tracking my iPad.
That's probably why I can't update any of my stuff now. Because
possibly. Huh. So that could be why the police are trying to track the iPhone.
Where'd your truck get broken into at?
Down in Oregon.
Oh, wow. Did they bust a window or what?
They did.
Oh, that sucks so bad. They broke into my Explorer three times, and they would break out a little window each time in the back of the thing, and that little window was $400.
Cost you, what, $1,000?
Between what was taken and the window, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's very unpleasant.
But the answer to your question is yes, those are the changed language, so the stuff that's underlying. Now we had our true confessions.
So that caused my thing to lock up yet?
I don't, possibly.
It's just that we all had it happen at the same time.
Yes, we did.
Huh. Not me.
When was that?
That was a while back.
That wasn't using it while I was
in
fishing.
Yeah, you didn't have any.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
You did. I had to reboot it this morning.
Oh.
Oh, that's Dave's, huh?
I discovered mine last week when I went to a meeting to do my usual note taking.
Well, it was right before our last meeting, I think, because I turned mine on in the morning.
And it has nothing to do with me.
Oh.
Because this happened last 4 o'clock Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning.
Oh. Yeah, no. Yeah, I turned it on to see if there was a charge on the battery in it. Nothing.
Yeah. So that's really all we've got for the workshop.
Well, then I suggest that we call it a day and move on to our regular meeting at 1 o'clock.